And we continue right now because, ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you, it's First Sunday. Here they are, the politicians. Good morning.
Good morning, Jerry.
Good morning, Jerry.
Oh, what volume. And they're getting ready for the choir at the National Shrine, evidently. But anyway, did you like that, Jim?
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, let me introduce my guest, Jim Pomeroy, Republican.
Good morning.
And so, Bush,
yes.
Is he giving in to the pressures on the troops coming out of Iraq? It seems as though every day I hear his speech, he's doing another speech on Wednesday, and it seems as though that we're going to take 5 troops this year, 5 troops next year. Is he caving in?
Well, no, I mean, the president's strategy has been for us to draw down as the Iraqis build up. So it's a sign of progress. This is not a new plan on his behalf. This is simply pushing and explaining the plan that he's been implementing for quite a while.
Nicholas Sawalk, Libertarian.
Good morning, Jerry.
Good morning, sir. Nicholas Sawalk, Libertarian. There is a great concern about the economy. It's a two-way street. For those who are rich, it looks good. But for those who are trying to support families and make it through the holidays into a new year and possibly get a college loan if they're not cut out by the year 2006, what does the economy look like to you?
I think that with the size of our national debt right now, the economy doesn't really look good for anyone, whether you're rich or poor, because we're going to be paying this government's bills over the next 50, 60, 70 years.
Eric Mickelson, Green Party. In Maryland, Delegate Brown, Anthony Brown, is out of Prince George's County. And he is now being considered as a Democratic running mate for Martin O'Malley, mayor of Baltimore, who wants to be governor. What do you think Doug Duncan's saying right now?
I think Doug Duncan's probably saying, I need to find a running mate from Prince George's County as well. I think it's an interesting strategy for the primary, the Democratic primary. But I think in the general election, it'll be interesting to see how it works out.
And, of course, we have our Democrat. Patrice McKinney.
Good morning, Jerry.
Patrice, they're saying that you can forget Hillary Clinton for the year 2008 presidential race. But now there's a talk about a draft of Condoleezza Rice. Huh?
Well, there's a talk of a draft of Condoleezza Rice. I'm not sure that the country is ready for a Condoleezza Rice or that she'd be a great candidate.
Why would they be ready for Hillary Clinton?
Well, Hillary Clinton's been in the highlight for some time now and has a great deal of experience.
Condoleezza Rice has a lot of experience.
Well, she's got the foreign policy experience, but she's no domestic experience.
Okay.
She's smart.
Well,
lady.
Anyway, to straighten this whole mess out, let me turn to my political scientist, none other than Michael Fontroy. Good morning, Michael. Thank you very much from George Mason University.
Good morning, and I'm wondering, are we going to draft Condoleezza Rice to fight in Iraq, or are we going to draft her to run in 2008? What exactly are we drafting her?
I wouldn't go there. But let me ask you, as a political scientist, everybody's saying politics is too much of everything right now. The American public turning more towards issues. Is this going to be what the staple is for the elections in 2006?
No.
Concern for issues?
No. I mean, there are always people who are deeply focused on issues that they are always concerned with. But our electorate is often easily swayed on symbols and campaigns and things that don't necessarily have anything to do with their political or economic.
So all that the Bush administration is going through now could be wash water by the time the elections come around?
Well, you know, I've cautioned a number of people on this. Now, the president has and his crew have mismanaged things, and I don't think there's any real debate about that. But if they drag Osama bin Laden out of a hole somewhere, I think many people are going to forget about all that. And that's the ace. And if that happens, then I think everyone will give him the benefit of the doubt.
Could bin Laden be hiding someplace in a little hole in the ground with a Coca-Cola bottle, as we saw before?
Well, anything's possible.
Patrice.
You know, I think that, Jerry, right now we've got a clear pattern of, abuse by the Republican Party, and the nation at large is starting to feel this. You've got a lame duck president in his second term. You've got an administration that's fraught with corruption. You've got taxes that have been decreased for the rich and increased for the poor. You've got a great divide between the wealthy here.
How have taxes been increased for the poor?
Excuse me, a little scandal on Capitol Hill, too. But does that
exactly?
Look,
you've got a culture of corruption here that the American people are going to feel, and this is going to sway the election.
Please explain that last statement.
But Patrice, while you're on a roll, let's face reality. I think definitely Michael Fauntroy's statement carries a lot of weight, and that is Nicholas Sawalk. People forget, and things could look good by next year.
Not only that, but all of these scandals create a great opportunity for an opposition party with a plan. And if we had one of those in this country right now, they would be poised to take a lot of seats in the 2006 elections. Unfortunately, there's not a lot of positive. There's a lot of negative.
You know, but the election is not until November 2006. It's not December 6th. And I think we still have time to get that.
And we've got it on this panel here, Jerry. We seem to have this feeling that the Democratic Party has no plan, that there's never been a plan put forth. You know, I'd like to point out that the DLC had a plan back in September for Iraq that more or less the administration has practically adopted.
Run away.
No, absolutely not. The DLC plan back in September, which has been reiterated by Lieberman, Biden, Reid, is basically the plan that the administration has put forth most recently.
Okay, Lieberman is entirely different from a lot of the rest of the party there. You guys have significant splits within your party.
Yeah, you're calling out the DLC.
Yeah, but you've also got significant splits within the Republican Party.
None of the rhetoric here. Let's get to the point. The point is the fact that President Bush went to Maryland for a fundraiser to support Lieutenant Governor Michael Steele this past week. They only raised $500,000, hardly enough to pay for the room, the dinner, or the presidential travel with, you know, the helicopter and Secret Service and the police and everybody whistles and things like that, plus the camera crews. Is President Bush a bad president to be on stage with anybody for the year 2006? And I'm going to turn to my dear friend here, Mr. Mickelson. Eric.
Well, I have to say, you know, $500,000 isn't a shabby take on one of these events, but there are a number of Republicans, including Rick Santorum, including the Republican challenger in the New Jersey gubernatorial race who ended up losing, who basically said, Bush, stay away. You know, right now you're not going to be helping our cause, and that's happening all over the country. So I think if things don't improve for him, yes, you're going to see a lot of senatorial candidates asking the president.
Is that bad for lame duck president Jim Pomeroy, you're a Republican?
I think this is overblown. The president can still raise significant amounts of money. The president is very popular with a large number of Americans, and it goes district by district. If you're in a very liberal district, you're not necessarily going to want to focus on national Republicans. If you're in a very conservative district, the Democrat is not going to want to focus on national Democrats. You know, all politics is local, and it varies district by district.
I think there's another point that needs to be made here, and that is the overwhelming majority of House of Representatives seats are cooked up in such a way that the incumbent will win re-election no matter who the president may be, whatever the president's problems may be. So, you know, I think at the House of Representatives level, it's almost a non-issue. Now, it was noticeable that Jerry Kilgore had sort of hid from the president until right before the election.
Night before.
And that didn't really work out for him. I don't know to what extent the president could have made a difference one way or the other that close to the election. But I would just say that the president, the president, when the president is popular, everybody wants the president around. And when the president is unpopular, people hide.
That's the way they feel about me sometimes. My dear friend, Mr. Sawalk, very quickly, we will move on.
The issue is that the president isn't useful anymore in those tight races, which is where you would want to bring in the big guns to try and squeak out a victory.
Not even Dick Cheney?
He's only useful in a race where the Republican's already going to win.
Right.
You know, to fire up the base.
Which means he isn't useful.
Right.
The big question, ladies and gents, my dear politicians, and our telephone number, by the way, is 301-230-0980, #980, the Verizon Wireless System. The lines are open. I'd like to get you involved in this as we talk about politics here on First Sunday. We normally do here on Metro Talk. The big concern around the country, last week, President Bush did a victory speech, and he laid out some pretty good, solid ideas about how he would like to make victory in Iraq and what victories already, what we have achieved. But the next day told the story also on the other side of the coin, and that is we lost 10 Marines. And there are those who are saying, bring the troops home. There is a senator who said, bring the troops home, a Democrat. And he's getting now some of those Democrats who voted for the war now turning their coattails saying, well, we support Senator Murtaugh. we will want you to bring the troops home. The president says, I'm not bringing the troops home until the job is done. My question here is, how soon do you think we're going to see a difference?
Well, it's important to note that the president's plan that he outlined, the definition of when the job's done gets closer and closer and closer. So the more pressure that's put on the president, the more his plan that he had all along is to get out real soon now, which is good because, you know, what separates us from animals is the fact that we can learn after consistent application of learning experiences like really low poll numbers.
I think you're going to see the president feel more and more pressure as the 2006 elections approach, because I think the longer that the forces remain in Iraq, the lower his poll ratings and the lower the poll ratings of Republicans in general are going to go. And so, I think there is going to be increasing pressure over time.
Patrice, before I come to you, let me ask the audience, please call us at 301-230-0980, #980 in the Verizon Wireless System. Absolute free call on Verizon. My lines are open. My question to you, my dear friends, as well as the panelists, should we pull out the troops now, or should we stay there and really do the job like the president says, complete the job and make sure that Iraq is self-sufficient?
But once again, Jerry, you have sort of a difference of opinion here. You've got the president saying we're going to basically stay the course until there's victory, which is sort of a loosely defined list of things that have to be accomplished. But at the same time, last week, the Senate passed a resolution asking for a resolution that this would be a year of phased deployment, and specifically noted the number 50,000 troops to be brought home in 2006 and then another 100,000 the next year. Now, Jack Murtha, as you pointed out, put the pedal to the metal on this and said, no, it's got to happen now. It's got to happen sooner. There have to be more troops. But it's interesting to note that the full Senate passed a resolution saying that this would be a year of phased deployment at the very same time that the president refused to say anything so specific.
Okay, we've got to go to the phones. 301-230-0980, #980 on Verizon Wireless System. As I go to the phones, my question is, how embarrassing to the United States if the president says, okay, I'm going to pull the troops out, we're going to come home, and Iraq just falls flat on its face.
I really don't care how embarrassing it is to the United States if it stops American soldiers from dying for a stupid war. I don't care about the embarrassment. It's about the soldiers.
How much more embarrassing could it already be?
Jerry, I think that there's also a false dichotomy that's created here. It could be that by removing the troops, the insurgency dies down. A lot of that insurgency exists because it's just simply against the occupation force.
Let's back up a little here. You don't care if dictatorship comes back. You don't care if terrorists reestablish their beachhead in Iraq. You don't care if they use that beachhead to come after us here in the United States. I mean, let's get a limit here on to how much you don't care finishing the job in Iraq.
Frankly, the president doesn't care about what happens in Iraq after the January elections, because that's his victory target.
Oh, if he didn't care, he could certainly have cut and run a whole lot earlier. This is a guy who is sticking to the right plan and
wrong
is going to
plan.
Stick in there regardless of the politics of the issue, regardless of how it's demagogued by others, and he is going to get in there and keep staying there, get the job done. It is necessary. This is not something that we take pleasure in. This is not something the president is gleeful over. This is a job that must be done.
Generally, I don't mind if people are stubborn and pigheaded and stupid, but when they get my family members put in harm's way for a stubborn, pigheaded, stupid cause, then I have a problem with it.
You know, in the war on terrorism, every single one of us is under threat, and our military is out there trying to stop that threat by going after the sources of it, and God bless them. And to have people here say that, you know, this is a stupid war and that everyone should just quit and cut and run, that is not a responsible position.
But when we're talking about getting the job done, I mean, that is an awfully broad and vague statement. And what we have is a president who set out a list of goals, and I would suggest and maintain that many of those goals are unrealistic on the one hand. On the other hand, some of them, you could argue, have already been accomplished.
For example,
he wants to say we're going to put forth a democratic government. Okay, we've had one election. There's going to be two elections. There's a constitution in place, and they've got their provisional government. Okay, how far do we want to go with this? We are not going to establish a full democracy in Iraq.
So you're conceding we're making progress.
We had full elections. No, I don't consider elections democracy, but we have elections and we have a constitution. It's easy to put in place an election. It's difficult to put in place a full liberal democracy.
If you're just joining us, my dear friends, this is the show where the host has no say. But here are the politicians. They are Jim Pomeroy, Republican, Libertarian, Nicholas Sawalk, Patrice McKinney, Democrat, Green Party, Eric Nicholson, and our political scientist who keeps us all on level, Michael Fontroy. Our telephone number 301-230-0980, pound 980 on the Verizon wireless system, lines open. Should the troops come home now, or should we stay there and complete the job? That's the question. Melvin in Silver Spring, good morning.
Good morning. A pullout would be one of the most humiliating defeats in U.S. military history at this time. The insurgency is growing hour by hour. From Syria and throughout the other borders around Iraq, the insurgency and the terrorists are getting in deeper and deeper. If we pull out now, it would be one of the most humiliating defeats in U.S. military history since World War II. As you remember, at the end of the pullout of the Soviet occupation of Afghanistan in 1979, what happened? It was the breeding ground of the mullahs, of the bin Ladens, and the other terrorists that we are now fighting today. We gave $3 billion for the last bastion of the Cold War, only to find that it was a petri dish of more Islamic and more extremism. It has nothing to do with political parties or the president. This is good for U.S. dignity and U.S. military awareness. We cannot pull out now. Okay. Even if I have to go,
Melvin,
I will give up myself.
Melvin,
I will not pull out now.
Melvin, hold your point. Don't leave me, okay? Oh, Melvin left me. Oh, boy. Pat in Alexandria, you got the line.
Good morning, darling. How are you?
Good morning, my friend.
I'm certainly sure that Mr. Kilgore appreciated the president's help, Mr. Farmer. a lot of the rhetoric that I'm hearing now about Iraq, never mind the fact I got a kid sitting over there, that's neither here nor there, was what we heard back in the 60s about Vietnam. If we didn't quote-unquote finish the job in Vietnam, we were going to have everybody, Cambodia, Laos, Thailand, Korea, they were all going to fall to communists. And so we sat there, and we sat there, and 58,000-plus dead Americans later, we went, oh, okay. Well, we're almost there now. Your president's doing real well, Mr. Farmley. He's got 21,000 dead. And there's very little progress. Very little progress.
You're merging a bunch of different numbers there. But
No, I'm not merging a bunch of different numbers. I'm saying 58,000 dead in Vietnam and 21,000 dead so far in Iraq, and that's in less than 3 years.
You're comparing U.S. soldiers. You're 2,100. You're talking about thousands or hundreds? What?
2,100.
Your numbers were confusing.
Well, terribly sorry, Mr. Parmalee. God, I've made a mistake. At least I admit it, better than a Republican. But the situation here is, unless you are going to continue to go in and spread your invasion out and cross the border into Syria and cross the border into Iran and realize that Musharraf is covering bin Laden right and left.
Which is why they keep trying to kill him.
Right, exactly.
Hold it. How many death threats need to be, how many attempts on President Musharraf's life do there have to be before people realize he's on our side? I mean, the terrorists are trying to kill him on a regular basis.
Yeah,
I think
right.
The man has a little bit of credentials there.
Right. He does?
Yeah, he does.
They keep trying to kill him.
Well, they're killing the attorneys of Saddam Hussein. So what?
No. Hold on.
They're killing everybody.
It would be plenty easy for Pakistan to turn their back on us. They stuck with us during the Cold War. Their president is under constant attack for being, in the words of the terrorists, a U.S. puppet.
Okay.
So the man has been supportive.
They did it for quite a bit of money, and he'll be supportive as long as we keep dumping money into Pakistan.
Okay.
But until you get into the tribal areas, until you go through, until you get all of this done, you're not going to remove this cancer from the Middle East.
Well, which is it, Pat? Do you want us to step up our military involvement in this war, or do you want us to leave?
I tell you what, I'll tell you what you should do, point blank and straight out, is all these people who sit there and say, we have to stay the course, we have to do this, we have to do that, go take a look. Go take a look at what's going on. Yes, there are good things. Yes, the kids in the villages, and a lot of them are talking to the American troops and giving them information. But on the other hand, our handpicked dictators that we support around the world, when we get a problem with them and they kick back on us, then we stand there with our thumbs someplace trying to figure out what to do.
Okay.
And you've got to go in, you've got to take out the problem and seal the border in Syria. You've got to take the problem in Iran, and that is a problem, and nobody wants to touch it.
So, Pat, you now want to expand the war in Iraq.
Got to move on, guys.
I'm not saying expand this formally. Obviously, once again, you are not listening.
I'm trying, but you're going off on a...
We know you're trying this formally every first Sunday. Nicholas, have a lovely Christmas.
Thank you too, Pat.
Bye.
Well, maybe Pat can explain it to me next month.
Well, she'll write you a letter. Paul in Forestville, good morning.
Yes, good morning. I know it sounds like most people don't want us to withdraw, and I guess I'm in agreement with that. But if we're going to stay there, as the president said, for the course, we need to make sure that we have enough soldiers to handle the situation and take care of it. But I also like to say that I'd like for a soldier to call up that's been over there, and I'll give you all a call and let him explain how he feels, if he really supports, because a soldier's going to support being in the military and his responsibility.
That's why the president goes out to all the military bases to speak. We know. Yeah.
Right. And, you know, they're going to do what they have to do because they've signed up and they're in the military. But this is a war supposedly on terrorism around the world. And then all we have is American soldiers over there getting killed daily. What happens to the other countries that are supposed to participate in this war on terrorism?
Okay, Paul, hold your point, okay? Don't leave. Stay on the line, okay?
Yes, sir.
Let's get Charlie. Charlie is in Kensington. I'd like to get his input on what you're saying and what we've discussed so far. Charlie, meet Paul.
Hi, good morning. Actually, I have a problem with the whole phrasing of the question, whether it's an embarrassment to the U.S. It's much more than an issue of it being an embarrassment. It would be an issue of a strategic implication. Basically, if we were to cut and run from Iraq and leave a nascent Iraqi government on its own, when it's not prepared to stand on its own, that would have implications for every country that relies upon us. I am actually an officer in the reserve component of the U.S. Navy. I have not yet served in Iraq, but I may be getting mobilization orders later this fiscal year. I think that there are some, you know, great strategic implications beyond the immediate issue of Iraq. I was fortunate enough to have dinner with Bernard Lewis, the professor at Princeton University, in early 2003, actually before the invasion, Operation Iraqi Freedom was kicked off.
Mm-hmm.
And over dinner with me, I was one of numerous guests. He stated outright that if the U.S. were not to see the operation through to its end, it would be catastrophic for the U.S.'s presence and role in the Middle East.
Paul, do you agree with that?
I agree with some of what he's saying, but the bottom line is I'm not saying cut and run. We need to get the 100% support of soldiers over there to take care of the situation. We need 200,000. If 200,000 is going to take care of whatever the situation is there, that's good. If it's going to show reconstruction and we're able to help the Iraqi people by having the amount of soldiers we need over there to take care of it, I think it'll help.
Okay.
But also the military, the Iraqi military, we have to understand that the U.S. military has been around for 200 years, and the soldiers in the military, they understand the Constitution. That we understand what we really fight for. But to develop a Constitution in a year or two in Iraq and expect those soldiers to really believe in what they're going to fight for democracy, for the Iraqi people, that's going to take years. They're never. I don't believe that they'll be able to stand up for maybe 15 years. We're going to be there for a long haul.
Paul and Charlie, thank you very much. Appreciate your input.
Part of the problem with this debate is, you know, we're using phrases like cut and run, where Representative Murtha talks about redeployment. And as I see it, one of the problems is that we never had enough troops there to begin with. And I'm going to be contrarian for a second. While I think this incursion has been a mistake and has been poorly managed, I also believe that if you go in and break up somebody's house, you have to fix it. And for that reason, I think that what you do is you're not slowly draw down, but actually increase the number of troops. You cover the borders. You make sure that the folks are able to clean out the insurgents, and on December 31st, 2006, have a transfer ceremony and be out.
That's political scientist Michael Fontroy from George Mason University. And our politicians include Eric Mickelson, Green Party Democrat Patrice McKinney, Libertarian Nicholas Sawalk, and Jim Pomeroy, Republican, here on the first Sunday political debate. Terry, up in Severn, Maryland. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing today?
Fine, my friend. Go right ahead.
I'm Terry. I'm living here at Severn, Maryland. I'm ex-freedom fighter in Afghanistan. I was in a war up there for 6 years. I was fighting Russia. And I've been here since 1989 when Russia left. We have a big problem. The problem is not in Iraq. The problem is in Afghanistan. We haven't finished anything in Afghanistan. The same warlord that they were with Taliban, 71 of them, now getting paid by United States, by Pentagon. It's $3 million a month we are paying those warlords each month not to fight us. And they still have the same weapon, and they're getting stronger and stronger. And once somebody stops that money on them, the flow of money wants to stop. I promise you one thing. It will be the same story all over again. Someone by maybe different name, but maybe act like Bin Laden, and will start acting against us and start blowing places up.
Okay.
We are creating more trouble than we are solving the dilemma. The same thing is going on in Iraq, because I know Khalil Zad personally, the ambassador. He's from the same area that I'm from in Afghanistan. There in Iraq, we are supporting 11 different groups, and there is no central power.
Let me ask.
Different people up there.
Let me ask. I mean, I think you would agree that there have been significant improvements. Not perfection, but significant improvements in Afghanistan. But if you don't agree, what would you suggest that we do instead?
Okay, well, I'll tell you exactly what we have to do. We have to tell these warlords to give us your weapon. I'm telling you, they have a Scott missile. It's
okay.
Like a cruise. Why do you need that one for?
Terry, thank you very much. I hate to cut you off, but because of timing, okay? Let's go to...
Terry brings up a really interesting point that hasn't been come up since about 2001 or 2002, but it was that, remember, we were funding the Northern Alliance people who were these warlords in their battle against the Taliban. And these guys had records that was, you know, comparable to the Taliban as far as the atrocities that they had committed.
There were individuals. There were certain individuals that there were problems with. But don't go tarring the entire alliance.
Okay, guys, I got to cut you off. Let's go to Joe in West Virginia. Hate to cut you off, but my timing. Joe, I want to get you in.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much.
Quickly, please.
All right. I'm a little bit concerned about one thing that nobody seems to pay a lot of attention to. People keep saying our soldiers don't want this and don't want that. My question is especially directed to the Democratic Party, since most of the soldiers are coming from the lower class and middle class families. Why are the young people enlisting in the Army in the first place voluntarily to go fight a war? And once they've done that, why are they re-enlisting and volunteering to go back again if they don't believe in what they are doing? And why doesn't the Democratic Party get back to its roots? I left that party because they stopped looking after the common person, and that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Joe.
Recruitment is going through the floor. That's not correct.
No, the recruitment numbers are not as high necessarily as you'd like, but they are still very
okay,
large.
That,
and they're still
the
man's point is absolutely correct.
The answer to the caller is that we're paying money.
That's right.
Lack of opportunity.
That's why there's enlistment. Is we're paying more and more money.
Guys, we can all sing together, but one at a time. I think Nicholas, you're bringing out a point which also relates to why there are those fighting in the Iraqi army. They're paying money. The guy said, look, I need a job. So I'll go up there until they see about 10 guns in their face, and then they run the other way. I got to go, Patrice. I got one question to ask you very quickly. The death penalty, Warner, he executed 11 people. This time he passed on one person. Is he positioning himself for something higher in office? Very quickly, Nicholas Sawalk.
I think that that case was decided on the individual matter.
Jim Pomeroy.
He's obviously running for president.
I think it's a nice contrast to Bill Clinton, who went home and executed a mentally disabled man in 1992.
And Bill Clinton never recovered from that.
Absolutely decided on its merits and was excellent judgment on the part of everyone.
While it may have been justified, may have been judged on the merits, Bill Clinton never recovered from going home to execute someone who's mentally retarded.
Jerry, real quick, I'm sure he did it on the merits, but you had a two-part question there in terms of, you know, does he have eye on higher office? And clearly the man is running for president, in addition to judging these cases on their merits.
Well, folks, there you've heard it, our politicians of the month. This is the last time we're going to get together this year for you politicians. Next year, we'll be back again. Maybe we'll get you back and have a good roundup of what this year is all about. Anyway, thank you very much, guys. I want to thank Jim Pomeroy, Republican, Nicholas Sawalk, Libertarian, Democrat, Patrice McKinney, Green Party, Eric Mickelson, and Michael Fontroy, political scientist, George Mason University. And I want to thank all those who helped to put it together this morning. Steve Solomon is our technical producer, Carolina Restrepo, Research and Administration, Shaheen, Public Affairs Associate. Metro Talk is a WBIG 100.3 and a WTEM Sports Talk 980 public affairs presentation from Clear Channel Radio in Washington, D.C. Have a happy holiday and make it a safe holiday season from all of the fire and police agencies throughout our metropolitan area, as well as Clear Channel Radio. My friend, take care of yourself. Much peace, much love.